from all sides, acting synergistically. It fitted my guerrilla warfare approach of hitting cancer with lots of bullets from different directions, rather than a bigger, more toxic hit from a single source like chemo, which only allowed the cancer to re-root and become resistant. Lovastatin was the first of the statin drugs on the market, extracted from the fungus Aspergillus terreus, and it opened the floodgates to a new pharmaceutical opportunity to lower blood cholesterol. A new drugs market had been created, whether it was necessary or not. No one was entirely sure how statins actually worked back then. They just knew they did. I didn't care either. Neither did I care about a lack of randomized clinical trials. All that interested me was that there were drugs already available and there was a strong chance they would work. I didn't want to wait 15 years for the results of a trial. I might not have 15 weeks. Taking the dapirolizumab and aspirin for 2 months had already made my SCC markers drop. There had been no side effects, not even headaches. I switched to taking the combination of etidolac and the lovastatin for a month, and before I added the dapirolizumab, I checked with Dr. Calabou that combining was safe. He gave me the go-ahead. The research already suggested huge synergy and a multiplication of effects with the NSAID and the statin. Would the dapirolizumab synergize too and multiply the effects even more? I had worked out that all the drugs would starve the cancer in a different way. Once starved of their major metabolic drivers, the statin and the etidolac combination would deliver a killer blow, triggering apoptosis once it was weak and vulnerable. At least that's what I hoped. But would it work? I was about to find out. Chapter 12. Lab Rat. Taking this drug and supplement cocktail was a giant leap of faith. To my knowledge, no one had taken this combination of drugs to treat cancer, and many would see it as too risky because of the lack of randomized clinical trials. I was confident from my research that combined with my cancer-starving diet, they would at the very least have powerful anti-cancer effects. I grabbed every ounce of courage I had and began taking them all together as a cocktail. Self-experimenting was scary. It was like sailing across the Atlantic in thick fog with just a handheld compass, no chart, and no radar. Would I make it across without sinking? I have sailed across busy shipping lanes in the English Channel in thick fog many times, and I can tell you that even with GPS, radar, and all the latest gizmos, each time it is still a frightening experience. In both cases, the worst-case scenario was unthinkable. I had no idea if my cocktail was going to put me into remission, or for how long. All I was hoping for was to buy some extra time. My SCC blood markers had already dropped with dapirolizumab alone, but I had no clue what the drug cocktail had done to my TM2PK blood result until I went to see Dr. Kenyon 7 months later for a repeat test. He sat there with a big grin on his face as he handed me the result. Boom! My TM2PK markers had dropped from 397 to 21.5. Woo-hoo! I nearly danced with joy. I was stunned, too. To begin with, I didn't believe it. Had this little combination done what I thought? Had I stopped the progression of therapy-related leukemia, known to be impossible to cure? A TM2PK result of less than 15 was normal, but a reading of 21.5 was good enough for me. Had I stumbled on a magic metabolic combination, a way to starve and conquer my cancer? Andrew and I celebrated quietly that evening. With advanced cancer, there is never any certainty. I was also nervous about taking all these drugs for too long. I knew they were all relatively low toxicity, certainly compared to chemo, but I wasn't sure what effect they'd have long term. I preferred a natural route wherever possible. Did I need to continue with them? Would the cancer come roaring back if I stopped like it does with chemo? These were uncharted waters with no point of reference. I was making it up as I went along. I decided to keep taking the dipridamol for a little while longer, but I stopped the statin after about 5 months. I only took the etodolac, that strong NSAID, for 3 months, as I was nervous about my stomach lining. I wasn't sure I was tolerating it that well. All NSAIDs are associated with significant side effects and need to be approached with caution. Besides their gut effects, less commonly known is that they can also increase the risk for heart attacks and strokes over the longer term, especially if you already have cardiovascular disease. Celecoxib, initially hailed as the answer because it was a selective COX-2 inhibitor with fewer gut effects, like etodolac, was nearly taken off the market when its significant cardiovascular risks came to light. But dipridamol acts in the opposite way, relaxing blood vessels and lowering blood pressure, inhibiting platelet aggression, undoing all the negative side effects of the NSAID. So, an NSAID combined with dipridamol seemed an ideal marriage. And unbeknownst to me, at the time, the statin improved the cardiovascular risk even further by acting in synergy with dipridamol. Statins release endothelial nitric oxide, making the dipridamol behave like a kind of mild Viagra, PDE inhibitor, relaxing and improving blood flow. In 2011 and 2014, Linda Penn and Alexandra Pandira at the Ontario Institute for Cancer Research published more results on their work on statins. They noted the potency of the statin-dipridamol combination for leukemia, myeloma, and breast cancer, causing apoptosis in multiple cell lines. I was right about their synergistic effects. A. Pandira, Ontario Institute for Cancer Research, Toronto, Ontario, Canada. Statins are drugs that have been utilized for years to treat hyperlipidemia via inhibition of the rate-limiting enzyme of the mevalinate MVA pathway. 3-hydroxy-3-methylglutaryl coenzyme A reductase, HMGCR. Recent evidence has demonstrated statins to possess anti-cancer properties against a wide range of tumors without being toxic to normal cells. Multiple myeloma, MM, is largely incurable, and in acute myelogenous leukemia, AML, less than 50% of patients with poor cytogenetic disease have a chance of long-term survival. Therefore, novel therapeutic strategies are urgently needed to treat these hematological malignancies, subsets of which are sensitive to statin-induced apoptosis. Through the use of a chemical library screen, we hypothesize that the identification of compounds which potentiate the anti-cancer effects of statins will uncover novel molecular pathways and/or targets that can be exploited in combination with the MVA pathway to maximize tumor cell death in MM and AML. A pilot 100 compound library composed of off-patent pharmacologically active drugs clinically used for a wide spectrum of diseases was screened in the MMKMS11 cell line. Dipridamol, DP, a commonly prescribed antiplatelet agent, potentiated the anti-cancer effects of atorvastatin. The DP-statin combination is synergistic and capable of inducing apoptosis in a variety of AML and MM cell lines, as well as primary AML patient samples. DP is a wide-acting agent and known to elicit numerous effects at the molecular and global physiological level. further investigations at the level of mechanism and evaluation of in vivo efficacy are currently underway. As both statins and DP are pre-approved for use in humans, off-patent and readily available, they have the potential to directly impact patient care. Progress over the following months was good. After taking my etodolac statin dipridamol combination, my blood markers remained within normal levels, but my immune system was still out of kilter. I was no longer resistant to colds and flu. In fact, they would knock me down for weeks.
At least your immune system is working, Dr. Calibou said. With advanced disease, it usually switches off, and you're left with no reaction to bacteria and viruses.
Was this why I'd been so resistant before? Not because I was healthy, but because I still had advanced disease and no reaction. Had the immune-boosting nutrients helped at all? Or had I been fighting fire with a water pistol? Chapter 13. Gifts and Dragons. Friends had no clue about my ongoing cancer concerns. Even Andrew didn't know just how close I'd been to another crisis. I wasn't going to make it a big issue. It was all under control. I hadn't even felt ill or stressed on my drug cocktail. I hadn't felt nauseous. Nothing. The apparent ease made me sure that other patients could be cured of their cancers in a similar way. I was brimming with confidence that I'd cracked it, or at least part of it. The answer seemed clear. Starving the cancer was the right path, and my cocktail had been spectacularly effective. Would it work for other cancers at different stages? When I looked at the stress I'd been under, it was no wonder I had developed the myelodysplasia. I had been desperate to launch the business, to produce this new range of toiletries, but it had been at great cost to my health. These toiletries and spa rituals were my babies, plugging the hole in my life and taking my attention away from the cancer. I was proud I'd managed to produce and sell them so widely. My first orders before I even launched came to £120,000. Not a bad start. But creating the brand was relatively easy compared to raising the money, producing the goods, and then delivering them to the stores. As a woman starting a business on my own, I encountered many barriers. The banks wouldn't lend me a penny. The department stores kept me waiting so long for their orders that the manufacturer I'd been working with in Lancashire decided not to bother with me. I was extremely disappointed by their lack of faith in me. They suggested I use a smaller manufacturer to begin with and turned me away. So I ended up using a manufacturing outfit in the Midlands. I had nowhere else to go at the time. Orders were finally coming in and stock was expected in time for Christmas. I was very excited about the launch, finally seeing my baby born and product ending up on the shelves. Then, disaster struck. The manufacturer screwed up production. Removing parabens had proved too difficult for them, and I discovered later it was something they had never done before. As a result, the toiletries had not been preserved correctly, and to my dismay, I discovered every single product they had supplied contained the same bug, which smacked of poor manufacturing practices. All the stock had to be destroyed. I was gutted. I had been suspicious when the products arrived. They didn't look or smell as I had expected. They were a far cry from the approved samples I had signed off. My doubts were confirmed when I sent each product line for individual microbial testing. I had to be sure they were okay before I fulfilled the orders to the stores. The autumn of 2001 was spent howling my eyes out as every penny of savings I had in the bank disappeared. I was distraught. All that effort wasted. I would have to find a new supplier and start again, but with no money at all. My pitiful out-of-court settlement with the South London Hospital had been used up.
Where would I find funding and support now?